Welcome to this podcast from the CORE MD project. My name is Alan Fraser and I'm the scientific coordinator of a Horizon 2020 project, which is called Coordinating Research and Evidence for High-Risk Medical Devices. And today I'm joined by Professor Beltord Koletzko, who's Professor of Paediatrics in the University of Munich in Germany, and he's a colleague in our research consortium. He's a paediatric gastroenterologist with a special practice in inborn errors of metabolism, and his colleagues in our project have been looking at the use of medical devices in children. So welcome, Bert, and perhaps I could start by asking you if indeed children need medical devices, because we think mostly of indications as people age and require degenerative diseases of joints and of cardiovascular disease and atherosclerosis. So what is the need for high-risk devices in children?
Thanks, Alan. Of course, that's very true what you say. With increasing age, our disease risk increases and also the need for medical devices increases. Children represent about 20% of the European population, but they don't need 20% of the medical devices, but a much smaller proportion for that reason. However, some children with specific disorders depend to 100% on the availability of a specific device. So we can think of a child with renal failure whose life depends on the availability of a dialysis equipment that is suitable for a small body size. Or we can think of a newborn infant with a severe congenital heart defect, with synaptic heart disease, with a transposition of the great arteries. Its life depends on the availability of a Reschkind catheter, as we call it, that is able to induce an arterial septostomy and bring oxygen-rich blood to the brain and other organs. So it is really of essential importance that we have, even though it is the need of a small number, we have availability of these devices for children. But since there are small numbers, there are challenges both with respect to financial viability as well as certification.
So indeed, they're very rarely used, but I think you've just said that they can be absolutely essential and life-saving devices. So is there any special status for these devices?
Well, in the current European legislation, there is no real exempt regulation like we have it in the United States or Canada, where there is a special road to evaluation and market access for these devices. In the European legislation so far, that has not been.
But they're called orphan products or orphan devices, aren't they?
Well, orphan products are not only for children. Orphan products are for rare diseases, defined in the European legislation as no more than 1 in 2,000 people. And many of these are genetic diseases, inborn diseases, so maybe about half of the orphan patients are children. But orphan diseases can also be orphan devices can also be devices for adult patients.
So there are some regulatory jurisdictions worldwide which have special pathways for approving devices for use in children. But if we take the example that you mentioned of renal failure, I think we know that recently it was published that nowhere in the world is there a device approved formally for dialysis in a baby, and that there are these gaps. So in your practice and in pediatric practice, do you think there's sufficient evidence for devices to be able to make safe choices for children?
Well, it really depends. We have performed a systematic review on available clinical trials on high-risk medical devices in children. It was not a comprehensive review of all the studies, but we selected some specific indications. And in our review, what we find was that almost 90% of the available data was on devices for adolescents with diabetes. So this is understandable. This is a relatively common disease, and the devices that are used in adolescents are pretty much the same that are also used in adults. So for devices like these in children, you can do good, proper clinical trials. You can get the evidence, and it's also financially viable for manufacturers because there's so many of these devices used. But then in this systematic review, we also found there's almost no studies that are available in infants and young children, where the studies are much more difficult to perform, and there's usually only small numbers of patients. So the traditional model that we have in medicine to do a randomized clinical trial to evaluate a diagnostic or therapeutic procedure is not really applicable, it's not really feasible under such conditions. So we need to think of other options.
If we think of European legislation for new drugs, there is a responsibility for the manufacturer of a new drug to make it available for all the age groups that might benefit from it, that have the indication for that treatment, which means that manufacturers need to consider studies to demonstrate safety in children as well as in adults if their drug will be used in children. Is there anything equivalent for devices in children?
Yeah, indeed. In the European legislation in the last 15 years, we've made really progress with respect to medicines for children. There is the obligation now for manufacturers, when they introduce a drug for adults, to also come up with a pediatric investigation plan and to propose how this drug could be evaluated in children. There's also a regulation that has really changed the availability of drugs for orphan diseases, that these orphan drugs get privileges in terms of...
So what about devices? Is it anything similar?
Nothing like that. In Europe, in the United States, there are active programs to promote development of medical devices for children. In Europe, unfortunately, we don't have that.
So how do you think we can get better evidence to ensure that we're giving children the best possible devices?
Well, if we can't do large proper prospective clinical trials, and we have to live with what kind of evidence we can have. We can look at clinical experience with these devices, even if it is in small numbers. We can, of course, depend on preclinical evaluation, on experts' advice who can make judgments on such devices, and then consider conditional approval, where we collect data after the drug or the device is introduced on the market under specific conditions. So we could have a systematic data collection through patient registries and thereby evaluate the safety and feasibility of such devices.
So there are concerns now in Europe that some devices will no longer be available in children because the manufacturers find it hard to meet the new evidence requirements. But that's only relevant when devices have already been approved, because we know that in pediatric practice, many devices are used off-label on the responsibility of the individual clinician. So I know that within CoreMD, you and a lot of colleagues have been considering how the situation might change or how it could be improved. And I wonder if you could tell us some of the recommendations that have come from your workshop.
Yes. First, let me say that this is a real concern, what you say. We have seen a large number of devices that are told to disappear from the European market because it's not really viable for manufacturers under the current conditions to continue putting them out. There is a very high financial barrier. Some manufacturers have said they have to pay 800,000 euros for the certification process to the notified bodies, even if the device had been already for many years on the market. And if you only sell a very small number of devices, it is just not feasible for
business. So what do you think should change? What have been your recommendations?
So recommendations, one is we need a pragmatic approach to evaluating the clinical data, the safety and feasibility. We need to have a decision on a case-to-case basis, because for some devices, yes, we should demand proper randomized or controlled clinical trials. For others, we need to live with case series and then, in addition, post-marketing surveillance and registries. We also have proposed that Europe follows the model of other jurisdictions in having a certification process for devices that are designed, designated as orphan devices or pediatric devices with small volumes, that they can be evaluated and certified in an abbreviated fast process with low low costs. So for that, I think rather than having every notified body in Europe do this, it would be important to select a few notified bodies that specialize on this and that have pediatric expertise on board to make these evaluations. It's also important that the costs are limited, either by putting a cap on the fees and subsidizing the fees with public funds, or even better, have an organization like the European Medicines Agency, a public organization, perform this evaluation that doesn't have a profit-making interest, but can do it for the good of the population.
I think you'll agree that for any new scheme, which of course is not yet in the European law, but that may change over time, because everyone recognizes the need for any new scheme to operate, there's going to be a need for increased scientific advice, more evidence, and contributions from you and your fellow pediatricians to help the regulators. Is that correct?
Yes, of course. I think it's a problem if you evaluate often on pediatric devices only from the perspective of engineering and regulatory bodies without having the expertise of clinicians that are familiar with the use of these designs. So I think there needs to be a collaboration to make this happen.
And I don't want to be too critical, because we appreciate that in modern medical practice, and it's probably as true in pediatrics as anywhere, we have a huge array of very effective and very useful and smart devices that we can use, and they can transform lives. But you've also highlighted for us how the evidence is lacking and the regulatory pathways currently don't cope with the special challenges. So let me ask you finally, are you an optimist or a pessimist in these circumstances?
Well, I'm an optimist, because talking to people in the regulatory space, talking to political decision makers, I can sense that people are aware of the challenges and they are working towards finding the solution. From my perspective, you know, I would wish there would be more effort there, there would be more speed, but I can see that there is an understanding that we need to find solutions, and I'm very optimistic that if we talk and work together, we can find better ways forward.
So thank you very much for this discussion, and I'd like to tell people that the results of the workshop that included, I think, 24 different medical specialties endorsing the document are published in Acta Pediatrica, and you can find the details on the CoreMD website. So thank you for listening, and we encourage you to hear the other podcasts in this series.